Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, well, you may remember last week we told you that some producers will be applying some fall herbicide once their fields freeze up. However, we're also hearing that some fall fertilizer will still be applied. We'll speak with retired agronomist Tom Weir about that. Other stories we'll have on today's show. Harvest has been over for only a few weeks now, but many farmers are lining up next year's seed. We'll speak with Mike Shuchuk, the president of the Saskatchewan Seed Growers Association, and talk about how that situation is shaping up. Regina-based Brandt Group has completed a $302 million purchase of service equipment. We'll speak with the owner and CEO of Brandt, Sean Semple. A $3 million research project from Regina-based Protein Industries Canada is moving into commercial production. CEO Bill Gruel will tell us about that. So all of that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prohitka, your RE/MAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Eric Weglars from Precision Weather. And Eric, it's quite overcast here right now, and it looks like this could be the situation for the rest of the day.
It will be. In fact, cloudy even through the overnight period. Not the brightest of afternoons, and certainly not the warmest, too, compared to the last couple of days. We're sitting at 4 for a temperature right now. We're expecting highs today to end up between, say, 6 and 8. We'll call it 7 to split the difference here. A low chance for rainfall as we go through the evening hours tonight, but again, it's a very low chance, all things considered. Overcast skies, winds between 20 and 30 kilometers per hour. The winds will actually pick up overnight tonight. We're expecting an increase to between 30 and 50 kilometers per hour. So as temperatures gradually fall back down to around 4 Celsius, the wind chills, with the combination of both the air temperature and the winds themselves, will end up between minus 2 and minus 4. So this is really the first real chilly night outside. You want to bundle up if you do have any plans outdoors this evening. We'll call for the air temperature to be at 4 before the wind is factored in. Tomorrow, we are expecting showers to arrive in the evening. It's a mostly cloudy day. High temperatures will climb up to around 9, the chance of precipitation at 70%. The winds do fall off as well to between 15 and 30 kilometers per hour. So we should see some improvement there as early as tomorrow morning. Showers end after midnight tomorrow into Wednesday. Lows will retreat to around 3, and again, the showers will taper off right before midnight, so there'll be improvement in terms of rainfall as we go into Wednesday, and Wednesday features more sunshine. That'll actually be the trend into Thursday and Friday. Temperatures Wednesday will climb up to around 12 or 13 Celsius in the afternoon. Full sunshine on Thursday, a touch cooler at 11, and Friday we'll see sunshine with increasing cloudiness later on in the afternoon with temperatures at 9 Celsius. So it is cool the next couple of days, but there will be improvement as we go towards the end of the work week.
That's Eric Weglars from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at 6 degrees, Swan River and Dauphin 8, Brandon 9, Show Lake Russell 7, Roblin 5. Regina and Broadview Mooseman are at 5. Saskatoon, Hudson Bay, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, all reporting in at 6. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky. Southeast wind at 37, gusting to 58 kilometers an hour. 78% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 5 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 8 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 2 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is plus 5. The normal low is minus 5. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:31 this morning, and it will set at 5:37 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Emerson at 8 degrees. The cold spot was Deerwood at minus 8 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Leader at 15 degrees. The cold spot Ville-Marie at minus 7 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Last week we told you that some producers will be applying fall herbicide once their fields freeze up. However, retired Yorkton agronomist Tom Weir says fall fertilizer can also be applied.
Specifically, you know, there's a lot of guys that are well underway with fertilizer, but I just wanted to remind growers that the products they should be looking at are urea or ammonia-based products. So that would be anhydrous ammonia or urea, or some of the urea products with inhibitors on them, or ESN would be another product that's suitable for fall. The products you want to stay away from for fall are nitrate-based products, specifically 2800 UAN. It's a good portion of that is a nitrate product, and that is susceptible for losses. Even putting it on at this time of year, in the springtime, we see significant losses in some years with that product. So basically, in the fall, I like to see people stay away from that product. The other thing with this fall, although our moisture conditions have improved a little bit over the last few weeks, we're still in a drought cycle. So getting the nitrogen into the ground below 2 inches helps prevent, fertilizer stranding, or else makes the moisture use efficiency go up. The crops can use the moisture better because they're drawn down, the roots are drawn down into the ground. A surface application in a dry situation, it can be stranded in that top half inch of soil, and that results in the roots of the crops just going down that deep and proliferating because that's where the nutrients are, and then running out of moisture later on. So the old banding of the fertilizer 3 inches deep is probably where a grower wants to target his nitrogen in the fall in a dry scenario.
When it comes to applying fall fertilizer, do you need to put it down corner to corner, or can you just target the areas that need it?
Well, I guess with that, hopefully if you're thinking of fall fertilizer, you've already got a soil test done to show you what carryover of nutrients you have from this past season. And in a dry situation like we're in right now, variable rate fertilizer is where that really shines, because we had, I think anybody that looks at their yield maps or when they're combining, they know there are areas of the field that did better than others. Those areas are probably have a little less nutrients left in them. So with the cost of fertilizer this fall being significantly up, there's some real savings. You can pay for that variable rate prescription pretty quickly by going that direction. So yeah, and that allows you to put the fertilizer where the rate of fertilizer where it's been depleted most.
What else should farmers keep in mind when applying fall fertilizer?
Well, I guess the other thing is don't forget if you're putting down urea, say, You can also put down your phosphate at the same time. There's quite a bit of work that shows that that can work quite well, although I would suggest keeping out 15 pounds of phosphate and putting that in a seed row to get the crop off to a start before the roots go into that band and start feeding off of it. So that would be a good option if you want to get everything out of the way this fall, or the majority of your fertilizer. As far as potash is concerned, there's no real issues to broadcasting potash on the soil surface and just letting it sit there. There's no losses that are going to occur with or your potash, other than maybe a little bit of runoff, but normally that's not an issue. And but again, if you're on the marginal deficiency line on your soil test, I would keep back 15 pounds and put it in with the seed row. The other product major that we talk about is sulfur, and a fall application of elemental sulfur works really well. And with that product, you want to put it on the surface, let it sit on the surface of the soil surface over the winter and have it weather, and then in the spring just do normal applications. So that might be something that growers can consider. Usually the elemental sulfur is a lower cost than a ammonium sulfate based product, so putting it on in the fall works quite well, although you can use it as a build program to build your sulfur in the soil. And if it's the first time you've used the elemental sulfur, I would suggest going at a fairly high rate, because it takes a bit of time for the microbes that break down this product to sort of the population to build. So, you know, if you're normally putting on, you can probably expect a third to half that product being available the first year. So if you're wanting 30 pounds of sulfur, you would maybe go up to a 90 pound rate, and then 2 or 3 years from now, when you're reapplying on that same field, you can maybe back off to 50 pounds of elemental sulfur. But this is the time when elemental sulfur works well as ammonium sulfate. Again, 2100 product broadcast in the fall has been used by growers for a number of years, and it works well as a fall broadcast or in a band.
That's Tom Weir, and a retired agronomist based right here in Yorkton. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
If you haven't booked your seed for next spring, you might want to do it now. The drought was widespread and seed production is down due to lower yields. In addition to that, Todd Hira with Seacan says growers should be prepared for sticker shock. He uses flax as an example.
Traditionally, our seed price would have been probably $22, $23. This year, the commodity is $45, $46. I've heard as high as $47 per bushel. So that means the seed price is going to be higher than that to compensate for the royalty and the extra work that went into it.
Hira says seed growers will have to decide how much of their certified seed production to hold for sale as seed and how much to sell into the commodity market. The University of Saskatchewan will honor two individuals who have made major contributions to their communities and the country with special tributes during this year's virtual fall convocation online celebration. One of them is Melville's Wilfrid Keller, who will receive an honorary Doctor of Science. One of Canada's most renowned crop development scientists, Keller has enjoyed a career spanning almost 50 years as a pioneering agriculture researcher and visionary leader. Born in Melville, Keller earned a Bachelor of Science degree in 1969 and his PhD in 1972, majoring in crop science at the University of Saskatchewan, before moving on to become a global leader in agricultural biotechnology research, management, and promotion. Keller has worked with the major research players in the industry, from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada to the National Research Council to Genome Prairie and most recently serving until 2020 as president and CEO of AgWest Bio Incorporated. Keller has been honored with multiple major awards, including induction into the Canadian Agriculture Hall of Fame in 2018, the Saskatchewan Agriculture Hall of Fame in 2017, and earning the Saskatchewan Order of Merit, the province's highest honor, in 2015. A major prairie ethanol and fuel producer is poised to spend just over $500 million on a system to capture and sequester carbon dioxide from its operations in Saskatchewan. Federated Cooperatives has announced it has signed a memorandum of understanding with Calgary-based clean energy company Whitecap Resources, in which the latter company will store and use carbon dioxide emissions captured from Federated Co-op's fuel plants. The two companies' planned operating agreement calls for emissions captured from the co-op refinery complex at Regina and from the co-op ethanol complex near Belle Plaine, about 40 kilometers west of Regina, to be transported to and stored at Whitecap's unit south of Weyburn for later use. The deal calls for FCL to fund, construct, and operate facilities at its Regina and Belle Plaine plants that would capture almost 500,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year for transport to Weyburn. FCL says it expects its carbon capture facility at Belle Plaine to be completed in 2024 and commissioning at the Regina refinery starting in 2026. CN and CP Rail supplied a combined 91% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 11, an increase from last week's 90%, reflecting an increase in performance on CN, offset by a minor decline in performance for CP. CN's performance fell short of the 90% threshold for the fifth consecutive week, supplying 83% of cars ordered on time. CP's performance dipped ever so slightly this week to 99% as compared to the 100% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 10. CN and CP combined will enter Week 12 with 675 outstanding orders, a net 8% decline of 61 from the 736 orders outstanding at the end of last week. The change in the outstanding orders represents a decrease in the number of outstanding hopper car orders on CN by 89 and an increase in the number of outstanding hopper car orders on CP by 28. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's cloudy and 5 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Harvest has been only over for a few weeks now, but lining up next year's seed supply is already underway. Drought has reduced the amount of certified seed available, and seed growers could be selling some of that seed to grain companies that are reporting record prices. Mike Shuchuk is the president of the Saskatchewan Seed Growers Association. He's a seed grower in the Blaine Lake area. He was asked which crops could have the tightest supply in the coming year.
I guess, you know, time will tell. I feel that maybe pulse crops could be on the tighter supply just because of, you know, there may be an increase for producers to want to put more pulses in just to evade some of the high fertilizer prices. I mean, obviously putting in pulses, you nearly as much fertilizers. So that could be a potential area, but I think we've seen a pretty widespread drought. So I think that it's affected all crop types.
Do seed growers sell all of their seed to producers, or do they sometimes sell it on the open market?
Typically, about 30% of our production is for seed. So, you know, we kind of wear two hats being seed growers, you know, our farmer hat and our seed grower hat. So we do sell a lot into the commercial market. And with us being seed growers and for farmers in general, these contracts this year are definitely biting into the seed supply, or have the potential to, because of the buyouts with these contracts. You know, we take a farmer, for example, who contracted a fair amount of bushels, or would have been a conservative amount of bushels, and doesn't have enough to fill that at the elevator and planned on retaining seed to seed for next year, well, instead of paying that big difference in the buyout, like, he's going to let his seed go. So, I mean, that could potentially impact our seed supplies this year too. So contracts are, you know, another factor that we're looking at.
So some seed growers may have signed contracts, meaning that seed that might have been sold to producers for next year had to be used to fulfill contracts.
Absolutely, yeah, that could happen in a lot of circumstances. And not only seed growers, but grain farmers as well. They may have planned to retain their own farm save seed and instead sold it to the elevator to fill these contracts. Now, at the time, they might have been thinking, well, I'll just get certified seed to replace it. Well, that also creates higher demand for certified seed, which could be short in the first place.
Do seed growers have to sell all of their seed each year, or can they keep it for multiple years?
No, like typically, if you don't sell all of a variety out, like, there will be seed carryover. But, it's not typically high amounts. If you've been carrying over seed for a few years and the variety's just not moving, you may decide to dump it in the elevator. Given our high commodity prices right now, which are record high, it's very enticing to get to, you know, dump these bushels and get cash. You know, right now, for example, we're seeing prices at the elevator that are higher than the seed prices that we were getting last year in circumstances. There's just so much volatility right now. It's just such a different time. And there's a couple of these factors out there that could potentially cause some seed shortages.
And will seed costs increase because of the markets?
Well, typically, seed prices do take into factor the commercial prices. I mean, it sets a base price to a degree. So it does feed to a certain amount off of the commercial grain prices. Absolutely.
In a normal year, when do farmers make most of their seed purchases?
You know, we see a lot through that, crop production week period, you know, like the first couple weeks of January there. See a lot of seed bookings coming through then. And this year, I mean, like I say, I hate to cry wolf, but it's going to be tight, in a lot of areas. So, you know, if you're waiting till April to book your seed, you likely won't find what you're looking for.
Are you getting a lot of calls right now?
Yeah, there's been a fair bit of interest. And even through, you know, when we were getting this heavy drought through July, and I was getting more calls than I've, you know, typically you don't get a call in July for seed for next year. So, I mean, guys just wanted to, you know, reach out and let you know what they're looking for, which I would highly advise, you know, just keep in contact with your supplier and just let them know what you're looking for and stuff like that. I mean, it's not always possible to find supply, but your seed supplier will do the best job possible to make that happen.
Mike Shuchuk is the president of the Saskatchewan Seed Growers Association. I'll continue our conversation with him right after this.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for December closed at 129.52 today. That's up 120. February live cattle closed at 134.75, up 125. November feeder cattle closed at 158.47, that's up 157. January feeder cattle closed at 158.57, up 125. December lean hogs closed at 74.20, up 87. February lean hogs closed at 76.77, up 15. And that's the livestock market conditions. We continue our conversation now with Mike Shuchuk, president of the Saskatchewan Seed Growers Association. While grain prices are at record highs, farmers are facing sharply rising input costs and concerning soil moisture conditions as well.
The amount of risk that we're carrying as producers going into 2022 is massive. Like, we look at our grain prices, like, that's all fine and dandy, but right now we're going into 2022 with zero moisture in the ground. Crop prices are good, which, you know, that's a positive. But fertilizer has pretty much tripled. Inputs, all chemicals have risen up just because grain prices have. So it makes it really difficult to try to take advantage of these grain prices when every other input follows. It just makes the dollar figures bigger and higher risk.
And you might be able to cut back on fertilizer and chemicals, but you will always need seed.
Yeah, you nailed it. Like, there's a lot of talk about fertilizer right now and everything, but the only input you require to grow a crop is seed.
The Saskatchewan Seed Guide usually comes out early in the new year, but if people want to get started a little earlier, there's an interactive guide now.
SaskSeed, publishes a guide every year in paper format, but this expands on it by putting it into an electronic version. So that was released earlier this year. So it's the first year having this interactive guide out. The advantage with the interactive guide is you can look up either a broad search on varieties if you're looking for wheat, or narrow it down to the varieties that you want better fusarium resistance on, for example. And once you find the variety that you're interested in, you can click on it, and it'll actually take you to seed growers in your area that supply the seeds. So it's kind of a timely tool to use here in given circumstances this year.
Does that guide have 2021 data in it yet?
2021 data isn't on there yet. It typically becomes available through December. So, I mean, it'll be updated as soon as possible. And, you know, we'll find out here through meetings coming up in November, like how the data trials went this year and everything. And because obviously the drought was widespread, but, you know, it's pretty robust data either way, unbiased. And it's a great resource for farmers to find their seed.
The interactive Sask Seed Guide can be found at www.saskseed.ca. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 60 seconds' time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Regina-based Brandt Group has completed a $302 million purchase of service equipment. The owner and CEO of Brandt, Sean Semple, says the transaction doubles the number of Brandt equipment dealerships to 120 right across Canada.
Well, it's a very large purchase. In fact, it's Brandt's largest acquisition to date. It's a total of about 64 dealerships across Canada, as well as Australia and New Zealand.
Is this now Canada's largest equipment dealer network?
Yeah, so when you consider in Canada, we're going to have about 120 locations that are full branches, as well as about another 50 locations. So when you consider a company with that many dealerships from one coast to the other coast, it is the largest branch network that we know of.
Where are you adding locations?
So we're adding three different groups of locations. So first of all, in the agricultural sector, we have northern Saskatchewan, southern Alberta, and central Alberta. And then in the transportation field, so with Peterbilt, we'll have dealerships for all of Saskatchewan and all of Ontario. And then in the material handling side, it'll be Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta.
Will this make you the largest John Deere dealership in Canada?
Yeah, so we have been the largest dealership in Canada for a while. In fact, we're the largest dealership in the world. This just allows us to expand a little bit more and now into the agricultural sector. Prior to this, we were just construction and forestry and compact equipment for the John Deere brand. Now we'll be in the agricultural sector as well.
How will farmers benefit from this?
Well, I think the way the farmers benefit is a number of different ways. First of all, Brandt is a privately owned Saskatchewan company. It's been around since 1932. Our family, the Semple family, owns the company 100%. We live here in Saskatchewan. The money that we make in Saskatchewan stays in Saskatchewan. And so when you consider those benefits, I think those are significant benefits for all of Saskatchewan. But I think if you focus on the farmers in general, Brandt's a big believer in customer support. You know, when the farmers are out at seeding time or spraying time or harvest especially, They need their equipment to run, and we're a big believer that we can enhance the customer support system for parts and service and ensure that they have what they need, where they need it, and when they need it.
Can you disclose the value of the deal now?
Yes, I can. Yeah, the purchase price for the deal, this was a public company before. We've now taken it private. Total purchase price was right at $302 million.
There's a strike at many John Deere manufacturing facilities in the United States right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we're watching it obviously very closely. To date, it really hasn't had an impact on our business at all. We have lots of inventory. Of course, the Canadian parts warehouses are really not affected by the strike, as well as our own warehouses and our own branch network. So to date, obviously we're watching it closely, but it really hasn't had any impact so far.
Is this basically a doubling of the number of dealerships that Brandt has?
It is. In Canada, it's a doubling of the dealerships in Canada. It will give us a lot more locations, and, you know, with a lot more locations, especially in rural Saskatchewan, really allows us to provide all customers, including our agricultural customers, but also construction customers with you know, parts and service that's going to be a little bit closer to where they operate.
Are you new to the Australia and New Zealand markets now, or did you have a presence there before?
No, it actually, so we've been selling our manufactured products in Australia and New Zealand for many years, for over 30 years, but we've never had any bricks and mortar or dealerships over there. With this acquisition, we'll have about 20% of the Australian and New Zealand market there. So it really allows us to have bricks and mortar to support John Deere customers, but also to support the products that we manufacture right here in Saskatchewan that we ship to Australia and New Zealand. So we're really excited about that acquisition, and the farming practices, especially in Australia, are very similar to the ones here in the prairies.
Can you outline the types of farm equipment you produce?
So we produce grain handling equipment, so augers and conveyors. We also provide light tillage equipment for tilling the soil, grain carts for harvest time, taking grain off of the field from the combine. We also provide grain bagging equipment.
Sean Semple is the owner and CEO of the Brandt Group of Companies.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. January canola closed at $943.50, up $18.20. March canola closed at $928.60, up $16.70. December Minneapolis wheat closed at 10.27 per bushel. That's up 14 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at 7.77 and 3 quarters, up 3 and 3 quarters of a cent. December Chicago wheat closed at 7.59 and a half, up 3 and a half cents. December corn closed at 5.38 per bushel, unchanged from Friday's close. January soybeans closed at 12.47 per bushel, up 16 and a quarter cents. December oats closed at 6.92 and a quarter, up 25 cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. International travelers are being asked to report lapses in biosecurity at U.S. ports of entry. The Swine Health Information Center is once again asking international travelers to report incidents where they have declared having had animal contact in a foreign animal disease positive region, but have not been diverted for secondary screening at U.S. border points. Executive Director Dr. Paul Sundberg says because people can unknowingly carry foreign animal disease pathogens, the objective is to identify those who might present a risk and direct them to further screening.
The pork industry in the U.S. has a very good relationship with Customs and Border Protection. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, is part of the Department of Homeland Security. And the CBP agents, those folks are the customs agents that people are used to interacting with when they come into the country either by airplanes. Certainly in airports, they're very noticeable and everybody goes through, but also everybody goes through if there's railroad, or even if you're in a car, for example, car travel between Canada and the U.S., CBP agents are the ones that question people as they come into the country and question them for a variety of different things, including all things agriculture, in their responsibility to help protect the U.S. from foreign diseases or foreign agents, maybe is a better way to put it, pathogens for plants, for animals, for a lot of things coming into the country. And I think, I'm sure Canada has a similar, an equivalent agency. And those folks are the ones that are in charge of doing that initial screening to ensure the safety of the passengers and the visitors coming into the country.
Why is secondary screening considered so important in circumstances where travelers have had animal contact in foreign animal disease positive countries?
Sure, there's people can carry unknowingly. People can carry and be what's called fomites, or a carrier of different viruses, different things that might be hitching a ride on their shoes, in their suitcase, without them knowing that. And so the objective here is to try to identify the people that may be the highest risk of the entry of these kinds of pathogens into the U.S. And we'll look at these as foreign animal diseases, for example, ASF, foot and mouth disease, classical swine fever, maybe hitching a ride on those people without them knowing it. So the issue here is the CBP, the custom official, first asks, have you been in contact with any animals on farms, and asks for probably high risk contacts for these people that could be in especially important in countries that have these kinds of diseases. And then from that point, then if the answer is yes, then they are sent to that secondary screening. And the secondary screening are the ag experts for Customs and Border Protection. They're the folks that are specifically trained for asking and identifying risks for foreign animal diseases, and including plant diseases. And those, so the customs agents are the first step, and then the ag specialists are ones that really get into the issues of where have you been, what have you been doing, how have you been interacting, and what can we do about it type of thing.
So what's been the response of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection?
The pork industry, and I think all of agriculture, but I know that the pork industry certainly has had a positive relationship with CBP, Customs and Border Protection. And honestly, CBP has even reached out to us and said, let us know if things are going on that we need to know about. And so one of the specific asks of people that are traveling internationally is if they have been questioned about their contact with animals or animal products or farms when they've been in other countries. So we're sending out, we're trying to make sure that the communication gets out to the general population, to travelers, that if they've had these kinds of contacts, they should be questioned by secondary agents. And if they're not, to let us know about it, because CBP wants to know about that. It's part of their internal review process. It's part of them making themselves better. And so they're asking for our help in reporting back where that doesn't happen, so they can specifically go back to those airports, go back to those agents, and remind them of the importance and what's going on and why, and to find out what the issues were with those travelers that were coming in.
What's potentially at stake in all of this?
Potentially at stake is animal agriculture in the United States. Should African swine fever, of course, that's a high topic right now, should African swine fever get into the country? The analysis tells us that that could cost $50 billion to the industry and to the economy of the U.S. That's a big thing, and that's not just pork producers. That also includes allied industry. It includes grains. It includes all of the things that are part of the whole pork production chain. And so at stake is foreign animal disease. At stake is the animal agriculture for the U.S.
And is there anything you would like to add?
I really would like to encourage people to make sure that they do contact. If there is an issue with Customs and Border Protection in the U.S., that they contact either the Swine Health Information Center, and they can do that through the website, swinehealth.org, or one of the other pork industry associations, the National Pork Producers Council, National Pork Board, or American Association of Swine Veterinarians, and let us know. The only way we can make sure that we're doing better is if we report back when we aren't doing very well. And so that's the interest here on behalf of Customs and Border Protection. We know that we don't catch everything. It is unrealistic to expect that we catch every instance as they go through. That's why on-farm biosecurity is so important. But it also is a manner, this type of reporting is a manner to make us better in the future. And that's the whole objective here.
Dr. Paul Sundberg is the executive director of the Swine Health Information Center. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy skies, winds southeast at 20 to 30, and a high of 7. For tonight, cloudy, winds southeast at 30 to 50, and a low of 4. Tomorrow, a 70% chance of evening showers, winds southeast at 15 to 30, a high of 9. Wednesday, late day clearing, winds west-southwest at 15 to 25, a high of 12. Thursday, sunny, a high of 11. Friday, cloudy, a high of 9. In the Paw, it's 6 degrees. Swan River and Dauphin are at 8. Brandon, 9. Show Lake Russell, 7. Roblin, 5. Regina and Broadview Mooseman are at 5. Saskatoon, Hudson Bay, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 6. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a southeast wind at 37, gusting to 58 kilometers an hour. 78% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 5 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.